I was not sure how everybody was going to be with all these new restrictions, because it, you know, film and TV tend to be pretty demanding and chaotic sometimes, where it's like there's just a lot to do every day. You tend to work 12 to 14 hours to get your work done, and there's not a lot of breaks or stopping. And this new protocol required everyone to sort of step back and be more cautious, and which is something I think is generally good, and we should probably keep going in this industry. But I wondered how people would, if they would just want to barrel over all this stuff.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Culturally Relevant, a podcast about film, television, art, and culture. I'm David Chen, and I want to start this episode off by saying thank you so much for checking out my series about 1 year in the Seattle pandemic. That's what we've been covering over the past few weeks on Culturally Relevant, and today we're going to bring that series to a close by focusing on a topic that's nearest and dearest to my heart, TV and film. When the pandemic happened, one of the industry's hardest hit was the entertainment industry, which depends heavily on large groups of people in close proximity to each other in order to make the magic happen. You can hear a little bit more about the challenges that this presented in my interview this past fall with actor Stephen Tobolowsky here on Culturally Relevant. My friend Megan Griffiths also experienced these changes firsthand. Megan Griffiths is a film and television director who's made films such as Eden, Sadie, and Lucky Them. She also got married in one of the first weeks of the pandemic at a very small outdoor wedding, which I photographed. That wedding was written about in the Seattle Times, and I'll link to that in the show notes. We talk about what that was like and discuss many more of her experiences in the world of TV and film in the interview you're about to hear. Megan is a local luminary in the Seattle film scene. I remember watching her film Eden at the Seattle International Film Festival and being in awe of its craft and the emotional gut punch that that movie lands. I've since gotten to know her as a friend and discovered that not only is Megan a wonderful person, not only does she have great taste, but she's also incredibly knowledgeable. I am grateful you'll get a chance to hear about all that firsthand. But before we get to that, I want to mention that if you're enjoying this podcast, I would be so grateful if you would leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or follow this show on Twitter at CrevShow, that's C-R-E-V-S-H-O-W. Both of those things help me to continue doing the podcast and help me to continue booking awesome guests. So again, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts if you can. Follow us on Twitter at CrevShow, that's C-R-E-V-S-H-O-W. I'm also grateful to my patrons over at patreon.com/DaveChen. That's where you want to go if you want to support this show. But I also post exclusive content, bonus conversations over there. Recent episodes on my Patreon page have included topics like the recent Apple event and what it's like to become an overnight millionaire. Not that that's something I would know anything about. And other happenings around the web that I discuss with my partner in crime, Joanna Robinson. Check it out over at patreon.com/DaveChen. All right. All that said, let's get to my chat with Megan Griffiths and stick around for weekly recommendations. Megan Griffiths, thanks so much for talking with me today.
It's so nice to be here. Thank you, David.
So Megan, before COVID happened, how would you describe what it is you do?
I would describe myself as a film and television director.
And what do you spend most of your days doing? Like literally on set, developing, you know, trying to make projects happen? Like what is the bulk of your day spent doing?
It sort of depends on what period of my career we're talking about. Before COVID, I had just come out of a year and a half or 2 years of pretty steady television directing work, which I had made a feature in 2018 called Sadie that had been the product of an 8-year endeavor. And so I was fairly sort of exhausted at the end of that process, and my television directing work was picking up, and I ended up spending a lot of time doing that, just going from production to production. And so I was either home sort of catching up on life stuff, or I was off somewhere else in the world, because almost no TV production happens in Seattle. And so I'd be in various other places, almost never the same place twice. I was in the year leading up to the pandemic, I was in Toronto, I was in New York, I was in Portland, I was in Austin, I was in LA. When I'm there, in any of those given places, I'm either prepping or shooting or editing. And then I'm back here doing my life things.
So you're living the life of a globetrotting filmmaker pre-COVID, right? Mm-hmm. And what was the first moment when you realized that your career and or your profession were going to change because of the pandemic?
You know, I think that honestly, so I was working in January and February last year in Austin on a show called Panic that's coming out in May, I think, on Amazon. And I got through that whole production and came home at the end of February without really knowing the word coronavirus or COVID. Like, I don't think I was aware of it, even as I traveled back to Seattle in February, because I was very much heads down in production, like getting it done. And then as soon as I got back, I was just moving straight into what I know we'll talk about as well, which is my wedding, which was scheduled for March 14th, 2020. And so I was just kind of shifting gears. But so I didn't really have a sense when I was working that things were going to shift. But when I was back in Seattle, sort of in planning mode for the wedding, obviously that got thrown into complete tumult. But the thing that really shifted my brain in terms of realizing that this was a major change in the way things were going to happen in the world was South by Southwest getting canceled.
Yeah. Because you're planning on going to South by Southwest, right?
Yeah, it had been a sort of a tradition in my relationship with Ben, my now husband, that we had been it was the first trip we ever took together was to go to South by, and then he had come with me when Sadie was there, and we'd just been going, and it was just something we both enjoyed because there was, you know, there's just a lot to do that that kind of satisfies both of our separate interests, but also overlapping interests. So it was just something that was sort of a tradition for us. And so even though it was kind of a strange thing, we were going to sort of make it a mini honeymoon where we were going to go to the festival and sort of spend a few days there after we got married.
You actually invited me to a gala where there was an auction, and we bid on tickets for South by Southwest and won.
Oh, so right. This
was going to be my first time going to South by Southwest. And then separately, I had actually been invited to be on a panel at South by Southwest. So I was excited. Not only was I going to get to go, but I was going to be on a panel. So it was like going to be great. I was going to meet people. You know, maybe you and me were going to see movies together or hang out. Like, it was going to be a whole thing. And I think in the 2 weeks, like even in the 2 weeks before South by Southwest was supposed to happen, they were still adding like speakers onto the lineup. They were still like, hey, so like Kumail Nanjiani is going to be, you know, it's like, oh, they still think it's going to happen. But at that point, the calls, like many events were starting to be canceled left and right. Right. And so South by Southwest was starting to stick out as a sore thumb in terms of, this is a major event that has not been canceled yet. Yeah. So it got canceled, and that's when you, yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I will say, outside of the film world, my sister's a novelist and a creative writing professor, and she had two books that were coming out last year, and she was going to go to AWP, which is a writing conference and place where people sort of unveil their new books. And that happened a week before my wedding. That happened on March 6th, 7th, that weekend, and it still happened. They still had it, and even though it's like thousands of people coming to this place together, I just thought that was, it's so like South by still was making a decision. Obviously, there are many more thousands of people than most events ever host, but I think it was still kind of a nail biter whether they were, which way they were going to go.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't a decision they made with like months to go. It was like days to go, basically, mm-hmm. until South by was going to happen. And I think the fact that there were so many people at South by, and also the fact that like people were traveling from all around the world too, is another thing. You know, the idea of it being this like super spreader event was probably something they felt like they couldn't bear that responsibility. And it obviously was devastating economically, but also I'm grateful that. I think they made the right decision based on what happened, what we know about the virus today. But it was definitely a challenging time. So South by was canceled. And I think you at that moment were not even thinking about what is the next movie you're going to be making. You were thinking, how am I going to get this wedding to happen that was supposed to happen like literally a week before South By or along those lines, right?
No, the day I was, South By was already going to be going. We were going to go on the Sunday.
Got it.
After so it right started on the Friday. Yeah. So it was March 14th was the day, Pi Day, that we were going to do our big ceremony with all of our friends and family around us, which is not what happened.
Right. And actually, if I recall correctly, you had invited me to photograph your wedding like around that time. And I had said, sorry, Megan, I can't do it. I'm going to South By. Right. And then
all of a sudden,
I wasn't going to South By anymore. You decided to move forward with your wedding in very different circumstances and conditions. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So originally we had planned, it wasn't an enormous ceremony, but we were going to do about, 128 guests. And it was, a lot of people flying in from all over the place and your standard wedding stuff. As we got closer, a lot of my family members from Pennsylvania were dropping off because they had to, if they had come to Washington at that point in time, because as you remember, we were totally ground zero for coronavirus in the States. So we were the first place, I think, where other states, if they traveled to our state, were enforcing a quarantine. So like my uncles from Philadelphia were saying, I can't come to your wedding because I can't miss 2 weeks of work when I come back. So that was sort of the first people to start canceling. And then other people were just getting sort of fretting about it. And I was very worried about just like canceling the whole thing and disappointing everybody and making them all sort of eat the cost of plane tickets and hotels. Because I just didn't know what that was all going to have the effects of all that, we didn't know what was going to happen in even the coming days at that point. Things were shifting so rapidly. We got married on Saturday, March 14th. On the Monday of that week, I had a conversation with a friend of mine. We were still planning on going forward at that point, hesitantly. And then I had a friend who was really wanted to be here. And I was like, kind of floated the idea that we might cancel to her. And she said, can I just tell you how relieved I would be if you did that? And then we were like, oh, geez, everybody's probably feeling that more than they're worried about their flight cancellation fee, you know? So anyway, that was sort of the pushed it over the hump. And we decided we're just going to change everything. And we ended up doing a wedding, an outside wedding, very cold outside wedding on a windy beach that was very beautiful, as depicted in the photos you took. And it was, we each decided we would invite 10 people. Most of Ben's were family because his family's local. All of mine were friends because my family is not local. And we just tried to make it as safe as what we understood the world to need it to be at the time, even though I look back, even looking back a week later, I think we were like, I can't believe we still had 20 people together without masks. And, nobody was wearing masks then and things were just shifting.
I just want to make clear that at the time that happened, it was so, if I recall correctly, it was still relatively unclear, like how the virus spread. And we knew, we know very little today and we knew way, way less back then.
Yeah. If you just try to think of I remember I wasn't working in that week, but Netflix shut down all of their productions globally on that Friday, the 13th, that week. And that was I remember people who I knew were prepping things, just kind of were like, we're going to shut down for 2 weeks. That was, that was sort of what people thought was going to happen. Yeah. And nobody just had a sense of long-term. I mean, who but Fauci could have predicted all of these things that have happened in this last year? But it was just a complete, it was just new information every hour at that point. So it was really hard to make responsible choices and still have some sort of a celebration. And I feel like we're lucky because nothing happened. Everybody was safe. And we did take precautions. I don't think, knowing what I know now, I don't think we took enough precautions, but at the time, I felt like we were safe enough.
it was completely outdoors, the ceremony itself, right? And so, but yeah, I mean, it just, I don't think, if I recall correctly, I don't think we understood that it primarily spread via airborne transmission at the time. You know,
I don't think we did either. And they were not recommending masks for like at least another month after that. So
right. So it was just, we just knew nothing at the time. And I, my heart went out to you because it was just like, it's such a, it's what a challenging thing you're dealt with, right? It's just like, you have this big day, you want it to be special. You've obviously put a ton of work into it, but then this thing comes in and it's not even like you have a sense of how to do it in a way that is safe, you know, like, cause we just didn't know anything. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, from my perspective, and you know that I'm like a pretty, pretty rigorous in terms of like the like how protective I am of myself, you know, I thought it, like you took like very reasonable precautions given the situation, and I thought it was like a good, you know, it was very beautiful, very lovely ceremony, and given the circumstances, it was like I thought you guys did a good job based on the information we knew at the time, which was again very, very little.
Yeah,
so you were able to make this kind of pared down version of the ceremony happen. But putting that aside, right, how do you feel like this has changed your work on TV and film over the course of the last year? Like what, how did you experience it both in terms of getting projects made and or actually working on set? Like what has it been like?
It has changed it by erasing most of it. There's just been, it was my plan to go back and do three more television shows starting in late April. And
like when you say it was your plan, it was like you had already been booked on these shows.
I had booked three jobs, one sort of late April to mid May and then one late May to mid June. And they were like lined up right next to each other. None of which happened. Two of them were canceled completely. And
like as in not postponed, like the shows
the
were
show
canceled
got,
or?
Like the show was canceled. One of them, they had booked a separate director for every episode. But when they finally went back up into production much later, they had reduced it from whatever it was, 10 directors to two directors for the whole season so that they could keep them both in Boston where it was being shot. So they, you know, eight directors were somehow out of a job. So it was just like things, it changed the way people were, certainly like, you know, with television often, you know, it's a different director per episode. So they bring all these people in, but of course now that they're dealing with, figuring out how to quarantine people and how to fly them safely and not wanting to fly people back and forth across the country, they had shifted like the hiring practices and how many episodes they were booking people for. And so that was one way. And then once you were on set, it was the only thing I actually have gone back to do on a TV set since this began was the show I had been working on in early 2020. They had had to shut, I had done episodes 7 and 8. They still had 9 and 10 to do after I left. That was the end of the season. And they had to shut down 2 weeks before they were going to wrap their season. So they had to figure out a way to go back and get the final scenes shot of the season. So because they couldn't launch the show until they had a full show, you know? And so they went back and they had also like all these sort of bits and pieces that they had missed and were planning on picking up or things that they were discovering that they needed in the edit. So they hired me to come back and sort of clean up the whole season and do little, you know, second unit things and scenes that were missed and various things. So I got hired to go to Austin for 2 or 3 weeks and shoot those things, with sort of a smaller second unit crew. And I decided to do it, if I'm being honest, first and foremost, so I could see my dad who had moved to San Marcos, Texas, which is outside of Austin. And I was going to be tested every day. And I, even though, you know, I just felt like I really wanted to take the opportunity to see him. And we still just, you know, went to an outside cafe and didn't touch each other or hug or anything, but, it was still nice to have that opportunity. And on that set, it was so interesting because I had come from that set. It was the last set I'd been on before the pandemic. And I went, it was the first set I was back to after the pandemic. So all the faces were the same, locations and production offices and stuff all were the same. And then there was this level of complete surrealness of like all these new protocols that had been like, you know, where you had to get tested on your way in. I got tested every day. And there's all these different things that were happening on set with social distancing and wiping things down and protocol in terms of mask wearing and actors who couldn't wear masks. And so it was just like things were fully the same and fully different at the same time. It was so interesting.
Can you tell us a little bit more about that process? Like you said, there's all these new protocols. Like, what was the feel on set? Were there fewer people than usual? And were there like frustrations or challenges around like shooting while people were implementing the protocols? Like,
There were definitely fewer people, but part of that was because I was not back with the first unit crew, which is the main crew. They were off shooting the end of the season. And then I had sort of the second unit crew, which was, you know, sort of not as small as it typically would be because we were shooting full scenes with actors and stuff. So, but we had, you know, probably instead of, this is a little bit of a guess, but like instead of the main crew, which probably had like 130 people, we probably had like 70 or 80 people.
So still quite a bit. And what month was this? Like during,
this was September.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, so we'd been in it for a while at that point.
Yeah. And they had just only within a month or so come up with, I think, what the unions were accepting for how people would go back to work for film and TV. Those conversations started early and then took off. As I recall, they took all summer. In Texas, they had a company called Pro Texas that would come around and keep everything wiped down and give everybody fresh masks and gloves if they needed it and hand sanitizer and anything that you might require. It was very humid and hot. So, and you had to wear those blue paper masks. That was the only one that was acceptable. You could wear your own mask over it if you wanted to, but you had to have that blue one. So paper mask, humid weather, constant refreshing of masks because it was just like your mask.
Because they're getting gross.
Yeah. It was just, it's kind of gross to talk about. But so anyway, there was those kind of things. There was a system with wristbands where people who were going to be in contact with actors like myself were tested every day. You would get your negative test result, hopefully negative, by email at some point within a few hours. And the actors would get tested every day. And the people who were, I think we were zone A if we were in touch with the actors. And then there was like a zone B and a zone C. And the zone B people were some people who had to be on set to set things up, but could leave before the actors were there. So you would set up with a stand-in who could wear a mask the whole time. Once you were all ready to go, the stand-in would leave, you'd wipe everything down that the actor might be in contact with. And then the actor would come in, rehearse with their mask on, and then we'd take their mask off and shoot. And so that was sort of the approach. And I will say that I was not sure how everybody was going to be with all these new restrictions because it, you know, film and TV tend to be pretty demanding and chaotic sometimes where it's like there's just a lot to do every day. You tend to work 12 to 14 hours to get your work done and there's not a lot of breaks or stopping. And this new protocol required everyone to sort of step back and be more cautious and which is something I think is generally good and we should probably keep going in this industry. But I wondered how people would, if they would just want to barrel over all this stuff and people who were hauling cables around and doing all this very intense manual labor, if they would want to tear their masks off. But people were very good about it. And I think it was part of, you know, people were just very glad to be back to work because, you know, they were needing the money and had been out of work for many months at that point, but also there was a assistant director from Texas who had died from COVID. So like his name was brought up on day one on the set, and it really put it into context, like the risks that we were all taking and that we should be protecting each other. So people ended up being incredibly vigilant.
Yeah. A few thoughts on what you just said, right? One is that a film set, and filmmaking is like alchemy, right? It's a weird art in the sense that it's not like you put in input A and you get output B. Like there's kinds of a magic that can happen on set that like allows you to get either what you want or what you don't. And it can be very unpredictable, right? Ooh. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely.
And so I think part of you is worrying like, hey, with all these new restrictions and all these things people need to do, like, will that make it harder to capture the things that you need to capture? And it sounds like by and large the answer was no, because everyone was just very diligent about following things and they didn't really complain that much.
I think the expectations had shifted from sort of the top of what could be accomplished in a day, because everybody knew that people had to go step away here and there to get some fresh air outside of their mask, away from the set, that there had to be there sort of this human factor built in that is often ignored in the hustle and bustle of making things. So I think like from the top, there was like, we know that we are going to be spending the same amount of money and time to get less.
Right.
And we are okay with that because in their case, probably they needed to finish their show. And so they just needed to do it in whatever way was possible. But there is a piece of that that I think is, I would like to see retained in the film and TV world, because it does tend to be, people work 14 hours a day. They have very limited time with their family and friends. And so I think there's a work-life balance that, that tends to get bulldozed in the film and TV world. So there's stuff like that, but I do think the expectation was shifted from the top and allowed everyone to sort of take a breath and be conscientious on set.
My experience is that that's been true of society in general, that when you go to a store to order takeout or whatever, like I think I am just in general way more understanding these days of however long people need to take to get things done, because I assume they're following protocols, they're wearing masks, they need to work around things that they might not have had to work around before. So you just got to factor in like things are just going to take longer. And mm-hmm. I think like if people can do that, like everyone will be more like if people can mentally make that connection, I think people would generally be happier overall, I think, just because, we're all dealing with this very unprecedented time together. You are a very safe person overall, Megan. So like it must have been a big step for you to fly to Austin. I know you were getting tested and seeing your dad, and that was like a big bonus, but like it must have been challenging because it's not like you've been traveling a lot otherwise, right?
Not at all. I mean, I had done one other small thing that had required travel, but it was a crew of four. all of us had been tested, and we flew in a private plane. My first experience in that.
I think I saw you Facebooked about this. I was like, "What? How did this? How did Megan get PJ status?"
I do not have that. I officially am still not on that list, but it just was the circumstances of this particular project where we were going to shoot in Aspen, and we were able to be taken there as a group after having all of us been tested and the flight crew been tested. And then we were living sort of as a pod while we were shooting in Aspen. And so that was sort of my first experience, and that was in August. And then I went and did this one in September. And then I honestly haven't felt okay about risking, taking the risk on any other opportunities that have come up since. I've just been staying home and working as much as possible remotely on developing projects and getting things sort of set up for when it's safe to go back, which is seeming soon.
Curious about that process, right? Developing projects in the future. How has that been like, and how has that compared to how you did it pre-COVID?
You know, it's honestly probably not very different in terms of like the development process. I've been doing a lot of the legwork in terms of, I don't know, trying to cast things and trying to work on scripts and working on pitches for things with all of these things are in conjunction with other people in other places. And so it's just been a lot, like everybody's experienced like a lot of Zoom meetings and phone calls and sharing virtual documents. So that it feels really similar to how that would have happened before. And I haven't like gone into a virtual room and pitched anything yet. So that I think is probably a really different process where in the before times you would have your group who is, say, pitching a TV show. I remember going out and doing that with Lynn Shelton when we had a show that we had written a pilot for HBO, and we went in and pitched to them in the room live, and you sort of have your spiel that you practice and you perform it like a play, and then they say what they're going to do with it, sometimes even in the room, but shortly thereafter, or you go around to various places and you pitch, you know, three places in a day or whatever. That all is happening online these days. Pitches are happening in Zoom rooms and whatever other formats people use, in sort of slightly different ways. So,
you mentioned your friend Lynn Shelton just now, and I just wanted to talk a little bit about that. So, for those who are unaware, Lynn Shelton was a very successful TV and film director from the Seattle area. And Megan, you and her were pretty close from what I could tell. And I think we were all caught off guard. I was stunned. It is the single death that occurred in 2020 that probably kind of shocked me the most, because Lynn Shelton is someone who I deeply looked up to as like somebody who came from Seattle, became a successful filmmaker. Not only that, seemed to be like an extremely kind and wonderful person as well. And, you know, that's just something that like it made her like a very aspirational person for me. You introduced me to her and I got to chat with her once one-on-one, and it was just, it's one like, I haven't told anyone this story, Megan, because like no one else would appreciate this other than you, maybe.
Well, that's
and maybe you won't even appreciate it, but that's okay. That's okay. I take like a lot of photos and videos on my iPhone. Like I get a new iPhone every year because I use like my iPhone a lot to make stuff. Mm-hmm. And every year when I get a new iPhone, I usually delete all the old stuff from my old phones. Because like, just cause I like to start with a fresh, like clean, I like upload it to the cloud and like, I remove it from local storage from the new iPhone. And, but there's like literally a dozen photos that I keep from iPhone to iPhone. And one of them is a selfie I took with Lynn when I met her, after you introduced us. I don't even remember what bar we were at.
I do.
And basically just like, oh, this is one of like my highlights of like my life in Seattle was I got to meet Lynn Shelton, this wonderful person who's a really talented director. And, I was just stunned to hear, cause she was very young, right? I don't think a lot of people understood that like this was a possibility. So anyway, those are my thoughts on it, but I was not nearly as close to her as you were. And I'm curious, like, what was it like to go through that this year during the time of COVID?
I mean, I am 100% with you in the fact that it was the most shocking. I mean, there's so much loss that has happened in this last year, and most of it is pretty removed from me. I'm lucky to say. But there, that, you know, Lynn's death, which had nothing to do with COVID, really came out of nowhere. For everybody who knew her, she was feeling poorly only like a week or so before she passed. And And, you know, she worried it was COVID. She was not, she was tested negative. You know, she was, it was not something any of us thought was going to lead to her not being here anymore, even though she wasn't feeling great. It was just this devastating bomb that went off in May last year. I wasn't expecting it, and it just like gutted me and so many other people. I mean, I was just like, we're close. We've known each other. We had known each other for 15 years, and I had worked on her first feature. She had been a part of many of mine. We were constantly sending each other things for feedback. We were collaborators. We had written things together. We had, as I said, we'd gone out and pitched things together. We were, but you know, above and beyond all the professional stuff, we were friends. And, you know, we had, when she was in Seattle, we had a karaoke routine. And we would just have, like, even when we weren't in the same city for long stretches, which was common, we would find like a Saturday or Sunday afternoon to just get on the phone and catch up for like 2 or 3 hours, just to kind of download all of our things in our lives. And so, yeah, it was, it's awful to know that those are all past tense things now. But yeah, it was the hardest thing I've navigated personally in the course of this last year.
I think one of the things about COVID that's been like really cruel, right, is that it has kept us apart. Like, it's a disease that that keeps people apart, basically. And it's upsetting to like contemplate how many people have been kept apart for both like marriages and funerals and, you know, all these things that like we generally go through together. The year has really revealed like how much we as society, as people, like as humans, need each other, I think.
Yeah. Sorry to interrupt. I just, yeah, you know, it's something that makes me, one of the things that makes me saddest about having to postpone this sort of big party part of my wedding, is that Lynn was going to be there. And she, you know, she made the decision not to fly when we did this smaller version. She was tempted to just still come, but was worried about traveling, as everybody was. And so that event was, I was looking so forward to it, and she was looking so forward to it, because it was going to be filled with all these people that we both knew from our sets and our crew, you know, and our people that we had come up with in Seattle. And it was like a reunion as well as being my wedding. And so it just really saddens me that she won't experience that, even when it hopefully kind of can come together again. That feels like a thing that coronavirus specifically robbed from me and her.
I'm sorry about that. And I hope that once this thing is over and people are able to gather together, that you're able to kind of celebrate her life in person.
Me too. And with her family in some sort of way that feels communal. There was, you know, I think that her community or her sort of close friends and family, we sort of found a way to have a grieving process together virtually. But it's just, nothing compares to being able to mourn someone in the way. I mean, there's ceremonies around these things for a reason, you know, and it's helpful in closure and in celebration of someone's life and all these things. So yeah, I really hope there is something alive in person that we can all do for Lynn at the end of this.
So to get back to the topic of the industry more generally, we've now been through this extraordinary year. Many sets have COVID protocols. At the same time, like a vaccine or vaccines are on the way. Like, people are getting vaccinated a couple million a day, as far as I can tell. So it's the tide is potentially rapidly changing. As you look ahead to the next year or two, do you feel like it's just going to be back to status quo? Do you think people are going to operate with these protocols for quite a while? I guess I'm just curious, like, if you're trying to predict like how your work and the industry in general are going to change, like, what are your thoughts on that?
You know, I think there will be some changes that stick around. I honestly think probably a lot of meetings will stay virtual, because even if you're in Los Angeles and the person you're meeting with is in Los Angeles, the traffic is such a barrier. It seems so silly, but it's true. It's like it can take hours to get to a meeting across town in LA. I know, because I used to go, when I first got my representation, I would go to LA just for meetings. I would go for like 3 weeks and I would set 4 meetings a day, and I would just drive around town going to meetings. And it was a lot.
I think like the pandemic has showed us like what is possible in some ways, right?
Yeah.
Like it has been tragic and it's been horrifying, but it's also showed us, hey, if we have to go virtual for some of these meetings, it can still function, basically. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yep. I think there's a level of that will be, that people are just not going to tolerate going back to sort of old ways that are inconvenient. And it's great for me as a person who is not based in an industry hub. Like, I will be thrilled to not fly for meetings. I can just, you know, get on my computer and take a meeting with someone, and it'll be normal. It won't feel like it's because I'm some like outsider who doesn't take my career seriously enough to live in Los Angeles, you know? And so I think there's that. And I think, I hope that there is at least a small shift in terms of how people approach set life, because it is so go, go, go. And you do sacrifice your own sort of peace of mind and well-being a lot in that, in the industry. I mean, as a director, but probably more so as like what we expect of crew members. And so I would like to see that there be a little bit more humanity in the way what is expected of people who work in this industry. And so there can be sort of this is the industry where people are fighting for a 12-hour workday. You know, it's not, 8 hours would be wildly short for a work a day on set. So, you know, the norm is really long days and short turnarounds. And so I'd like to see some humanity return to that. And I'm hoping that a little bit of and also just, you know, sanitation stuff is, you know, probably we should be not going to work when we're sick. Traveling without some kind of precautions, like especially if we're experiencing any kind of symptoms. Like I recall not too long ago, a few years ago, I got desperately sick on a production right at the end, and it was when I was doing my Sadie tour. We were traveling all over for screenings, so I left this production in Boston where I was so sick, and I had, while I was in Boston, been in Boston and Rhode Island. So I had gone to 2 states. On my way home, I flew to South Dakota to do a screening. And then I flew to Seattle. And then I had a meeting in LA. And so I flew to LA and back. And it was just like, I hit so many states when I was so infectious. And I was on so many planes sitting next to people when I was carrying so much, whatever it was that I was carrying. And I'm just like horrified thinking of that now. And I just feel like we're all a little bit more aware of that. And like there is an expectation, especially in my film industry, like that you come to work if you're sick. If you're a director, you can't call in sick. Like if I'm working for 3 weeks on a TV job, I have to be there. I can't not be there. So there's just no way around it. And I don't know what they're going to do about that now.
Yeah, I think in the U.S., presenteeism, as they call it, is a very big issue, right? Mm-hmm. Which is you show up to work, and you show up to work even when you're not feeling well, because it's expected of you, because the capitalist machine must grind onwards. And my sense from the last year is many places have started being aware of this, and I think it'll be much easier to justify not going to work as a result of being ill in the future is my guess, but we'll see whether or not that applies to like the corporate environment, the film world. But it's certainly in the last year, it would be very understandable, I think, right? Like if people use that as an excuse, like no one would look askance at that. Yes.
Yeah. I wonder if there's going to be some sort of FaceTime like solution for a director who can't be physically on set, or if you're going to walk around in like some sort of hazmat suit to do, because it's really like there is nobody who can step in for you. You don't have an understudy when you're directing. So it's like, I've never missed a day on set as a director. I've never called in sick one time in 20 years. And I never did when I was in other crew positions either. It's just like, you feel like it can't happen without you. And I feel like there's got to be a way to make it happen without you or with you virtually or something.
Did you ever see Arrested Development, the TV series?
Yeah.
You know how I think George Blues Sr. had a surrogate who would like stand there with an iPad or a camera, yeah, and basically like you would talk for him and stuff?
Oh my God, that's right. So that's the way to go.
You just got to hire a surrogate for your film sets and you're all set. Perfect. You don't need to worry about it ever again.
It's just hard to imagine, like, the thing that is the trickiest thing to envision is having conversations with actors about performance. Like, if you're not physically there, like if somebody's like holding a FaceTime, it's just like, it's impossible to imagine. It's like, there's got to be a solution, but I feel like that's going to be something that comes up because people are going to be like, the crew is not going to want to see someone come into set hacking, you know, which has happened constantly on other productions. Like, I will say, the production I was working on in January and February in Austin, people were dropping like flies from a major illness, and it may have been COVID. In retrospect, we didn't know what that was then, but I remember going on the tech scout with the production designer, like laying flat in the back of the van on one of the seats, just like looking like he was about to die. And we were in a enclosed van together all day. and that was just expected. God. I mean, it's just like, I think we expected people to show up and be at work, even with that. Like, it's just, it was not that weird that he was there. I was more worried about him not getting rest than I was about me getting germs.
Right. Megan, part of me is really glad that this thing not necessarily has an end in sight, but that like there's a lot of relief on the way. Mm-hmm. And part of me feels like there were really valuable lessons that we as a society didn't learn because it's over so quickly. Like, if this, there's a time when this could have gone on for four to five years. And I am a little bit worried that, like, hey, yes, we should treat people like humanely and not expect them to come to work. So, you know, like, and I worry that because things are like starting to return to status quo, like America's just going to move on. Cause I feel like our society is really good at moving on, you know?
Yeah, we definitely are. I don't know if I would qualify this year as feeling like quick.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I mean, in the grand time scale of the history of the United States, it might be, but you know, but I understand for those of us who were in it, it did not feel quick at all. I agree.
No. Yeah. And I do feel like, I mean, it really shifted my brain, and I feel like it's got to have, I mean, I'm excited to return to relative normalcy. I really, really, really want to hug friends again. So there's like stuff like that, that I'm just excited about. But then there's a lot of stuff in terms of the way we interact with strangers and people on airplanes and in the grocery store and stuff that it has fundamentally changed the way I will operate in this world. I have never been a germaphobe in my life. I have always operated under the belief that a certain degree of germs in your life are good for you, you know, so that it has shifted that for me. I don't know if I'm fully in the germaphobe camp, but like I definitely have a different outlook than I did on this day last year, or maybe a week before this day last year.
Same. Yeah. I mean, I don't think I'm ever going to shake another person's hand for the rest of my life is my guess.
Yeah.
I mean, I hated that practice before COVID, and now I have an excuse to actually not do it because,
I mean, it's so funny. A lot of people say that, and Melanie Linsky, who I worked with on Sadie, just posted on Twitter about how excited she is to not ever have to deal with people who are like, I'm a hugger, and like, who she doesn't know, and just like accost her. And like, these are things that like didn't bother me, but now will bother me. So I've now come over to your side on those.
Welcome. The water is warm, Megan.
And but sanitary.
Clean, but clean and sanitary. That's right. That's right. Two last questions. I'm asking everyone I'm talking with about this topic the same two questions. Number one is, and I think we already know this one, but just in case, what was your last positive memory before COVID happened?
Well, if it can count as before COVID happened, it would certainly be my wedding day. Because it definitely wasn't technically before COVID happened. But it was definitely right on the borderline. It was before we really knew everything that we ultimately knew. And it was such a beautiful day, even though it was like the week was insane leading up to it and things just shifted in huge ways. And I really, really was sad that my family wasn't there. But I was just like, it was a really lovely day. And the people who were there were really close friends. And it was just like filled with joy. So that would certainly be it.
And what is the thing you're most looking forward to after the pandemic?
In the small sense, enormous sense, it's just hugging people that are friends of mine, not accosting strangers like with hugs, but hugging friends. But in the sort of very specific sense, it's probably gathering all those same people again who we planned to have around us when we got married and do the real big party.
Sounds like a blast. Well, I hope that you get the celebrations that you deserve, Megan, and that it all works out. But I'm sorry that this year has been really tough, but I'm glad that you're doing well and seeming to get through it.
Yeah, thank you. I feel like a very fortunate person. There are very few times in my career when I could have weathered this financially. So I'm grateful for what I was able to accomplish on the sort of professional side to let this year kind of unfold in a relatively comfortable way for me personally. And I am grateful to have had my husband with me for this whole year, because I had no idea that when we said I do, it was going to be every second of our lives for a year. And luckily, it's been great. And I'm really, really grateful for it.
That's wonderful. Well, Megan Griffiths is a film and television director who's made films such as Eden, Sadie, and Lucky Them. Megan, thanks so much for chatting with me today.
Thank you, Dave. It's a pleasure.
Welcome to Weekly Recommendations. It's the part of the show each week where we recommend something we've been reading, watching, listening to, eating, drinking, etc. For the course of this series, I'm going to just do what I've been doing every week for the last few weeks and recommend that you check out the rest of the series. If you enjoyed this conversation, share about it on your social media, why don't you? Leave a review for us on Apple Podcasts or follow us on Twitter at CRefShow. Thanks so much for doing so. Thanks to all my patrons over at patreon.com/DaveChen for making my work possible. I asked Megan for a weekly recommendation. Here's what she had to say.
A friend of mine named Davey Rothbart made a movie called 17 Blocks. And it's playing at the cinema right now, actually, virtually. But it's a documentary that is made up of material that was gathered over 2+ decades from a family that lives 17 blocks away from the U.S. Capitol in Washington, D.C. That goes through a huge amount of tragedy and strife. And it's just like construction of all of this footage into this narrative arc that is devastating and also hopeful and really, really beautifully done. And so I just was kind of blown away by it last night when I watched it, and I recommend that.
Okay, that's 17 Blocks. And yep. Is it streaming or?
So if you go to 17blocksfilm.com, that's where they have like, they have a link that says watch the film, and it has like every virtual theater you can stream it through, including Stiff Cinema, but there's like 50 of them. So
awesome. Yeah. I've enjoyed doing the virtual cinemas because you're watching a cool movie and you're benefiting a local theater. So I think it's a great program.
Yeah. I like it too. It's like a good way to support something local and also support a movie that is good. So
indeed. Yeah.
You can sort of choose your theater.
That's 17 Blocks. Check out more information at 17blocksfilm.com. Megan, thanks for sharing that with us.
Yeah, my pleasure.
That's going to do it for us this week on Culturally Relevant. You can find more episodes of this podcast at culturallyrelevantshow.com. This episode was edited and produced by me, David Chen, and it was powered by Simplecast. Check out Simplecast.com for a great podcast management and analytics solution, Simplecast. Thanks for listening. See you next week on Culturally Relevant.